Welcome to the Diet Doctor Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Brett Scher. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Michael Arata and Stephanie Kennedy. Now, Dr. Mike has an amazing story, as many physicians do, who transition to being more of a lifestyle and nutrition-based physician. He's an interventional radiologist and specializes in limb salvage, which means he's sort of the last resort before someone has an amputation to try and save somebody's limb. It's very high pressure, intense work. But like a lot of physicians, he realized he wasn't really affecting the problem in a good enough way to prevent it. And that's when he transitioned, plus with some of his own health challenges, which we'll talk about. And what they've developed is a functional medicine lifestyle practice. And as part of that, they focus on a low-carb ketogenic diet, but they focus on it from a plant basis. So primarily a vegan ketogenic diet, but, and here's the key, with cycling. And that's something that's going to keep coming up over and over again, because the more we learn about it, the more we realize how important cycling is. And that means cycling with intermittent fasting and cycling with meat. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to get into some of the controversies about plants versus carnivore diet versus a balance of all that, talk about their philosophy of how they approach their patients and some of the concerns with a vegan diet and what you need to be careful monitoring for. And of course, talk about their book that's coming out, Keto with Plants. So I really enjoyed this interview. I like their perspective a lot and their approach to the patient and sort of their really just balanced way of approaching people to help them not only understand the science, but understand how to implement it and how to make the changes last. So I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I did. If you want to learn more about us, you can visit us at dietdoctor.com or you can visit me at lowcarbcardiologist.com. Thanks a lot and enjoy the interview with Dr. Mike Arata and Stephanie Kennedy. Dr. Michael Arata and Stephanie Kennedy, thank you so much for joining me on the Diet Doctor Podcast.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So actually, Dr. Mike, right?
Yes.
Very good. Well, you've had quite the interesting journey. So let's start with you. It always fascinates me how people find their way in medicine to focusing more on lifestyle and treating the whole patient. And I remember when we met yesterday at lunch, we were talking about it. And I said, oh, you must have an internal medicine or a family practice background to get to this point. And you said, no, interventional radiology. And that is not what I expected. So you're an interventional radiologist. You spend all day in a cath lab type suite, sticking catheters and needles in people and draining things and opening arteries. And yet you transitioned to wanting people to work on their lifestyle. So give us a little bit of background on how you got to that point.
Sure. Well, you know, I think as an intervention radiologist, I was drawn to the technological aspects of the specialty, the innovative nature. I mean, intervention radiologists have kind of created all kinds of different treatments and taken different devices and modified them. And, you know, it's very much a gadget type of a field.
He loves his gadgets.
And I do love my gadgets. Absolutely. No question. So that's what really drew me to it. And then, you know, as I got into my practice, I really enjoyed some of the things you could do that were, you know, alternatives to big surgeries that could produce outcomes in patients maybe that couldn't even tolerate a surgery. So they were too sick to have a surgery, and you could step in and intervene and make a difference in someone that maybe had no options at all. So that was very satisfying. But as I got more into limb salvage, most of the patients typically would be either diabetics or renal failure or both. And those patients, you could get a good result in the short term, but unfortunately, most of those patients, it's not a long-term solution. So, right. You know, you could spend 3-4 hours in a case basically revascularizing someone from their abdominal aorta all the way down to their toes and actually get blood flow back to their feet. They could heal their ulcer. 3 months later, they're back.
Right.
And, you know, when you are doing one of these cases and you're wearing 30 to 40 pounds of lead and, you know, it gets really hot and it's actually quite fatiguing in these long cases. So at the end of it, you're gratified by the fact you've helped the person, but then you're really disappointed when they come back. And it just got me thinking, there's got to be something better. You know, how can we allow this to happen is really what I would start to question.
Right.
And I didn't have the knowledge base, the experience, the exposure to understand what got people to that point to the degree I needed. Fortunately, I started working with other patients who had naturopaths as part of their care team. And my interactions with them really started to basically plant the seed that there is something different. And I think a key part of this for my story is I was a biochemistry major as an undergrad. So when I started discussing things with naturopath, they often talked about the biochemical aspect of it.
Oh, interesting.
That really resonated with me. And fortunately, one of the naturopaths I worked with suggested I go to a functional medicine conference. When I went, my life changed.
Wow.
It literally just flipped a switch. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is it. And it really is a biochemical-based aspect. There's a lot of different overlapping specialties, you know, integrative medicine, functional medicine. You know, these things are not that different. I mean, there's a lot of overlap. But one of the key things about functional medicine is it's more systems biology and biochemistry-based. So that was, I think I needed that.
Right.
I don't think I would have made this transition without that science core to it.
Right.
Well, with this knowledge I was learning, I experimented on me. And being someone that was working 90 to 100 hours a week, I was your typical American. I had all the conditions that you see in middle-aged, now actually younger adults. So I was not sleeping. I had sleep apnea. I weighed 230 pounds. I had bad gastroesophageal reflux. I had skin conditions. You know, eczema would flare up all the time.
Yeah. Too busy taking care of everybody else to take care of yourself.
Yeah. All of these things that just slowly drag you down and eventually lead to more serious conditions. Well, those things started clearing up. I started losing weight.
And what did you do? What was your intervention to...
Well, the first thing was food. Mm-hmm. And actually, interestingly enough, the first diet that I tried was ketogenic diet.
That was the very first one.
That was the
first
one.
You got lucky right off the bat.
Yeah. And I felt great. I mean, the one thing I noticed was the energy level, the clarity of thought. I mean, those were the things that really stood out to me because I was so fatigued. I was just living on sugar and coffee.
Yeah.
I was literally had one of those big, 22-ounce or whatever it was, Cokes.
Ooh,
had one of those in my hand all day.
Yeah.
So it was basically just, you know, mainlining caffeine and sugar to survive.
Right.
And function. And so...
Which is not that unusual. I mean, we react to it like it's the worst thing in the world, but it's actually not that unusual.
You look around and you see it everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So that was the big switch. And I started sleeping better. And when I lost weight, the sleep apnea went away on its own. I also had very bad hypertension. So I first was diagnosed with high blood pressure in college in my 20s. And I got to the point where I was actually on 4 medications and still had a pressure of 160 over 100.
Wow.
So I was really bad. That started getting better and I actually was getting off the medications.
Amazing.
So it was an incredible experience to see what happened to myself when I did something that was not what I'd been, you know, basically brought up in the system.
Right. And that's what's so amazing, that so many doctors have the transformation by having their own transformation, and then they transform their practice because we weren't taught this. So we have to be able to go outside of what we were told is the way to do things.
Absolutely.
So it's an incredible journey. And then you open up a practice where now you're treating people holistically. You're treating not just a one problem in the IR suite, but trying to treat them as a whole person, focusing on nutrition and ketosis as a cornerstone of that treatment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I obviously had to go through a lot of educational processes, and maybe I did too much, but I just felt like I really needed to know this.
Right.
And so it was an evolution, and we've gotten to the point now where I do incorporate ketosis. I think it's important to understand where I'm coming from is I'm not really someone that advocates or uses therapeutic ketosis. I mean, I think it has its place, but not with the patients that I'm seeing. So we're focusing on nutritional ketosis.
Right.
And while I did obviously jump right into a ketogenic diet for my first go-round, I also found that plants really make me feel well. And it was kind of a revelation for us both because we did it together. The first time we did... it wasn't quite a vegetarian diet, but it was very plant heavy. And we both felt tremendous. Now, Stephanie had been vegetarian before, so she had more experience with, I was a carnivore. I would go and have a big steak and just leave the plants.
So Stephanie, was this your influence then to get him to try more of the plants?
It was part of my training through, it's a functional medicine diet, the Renew plan. So it's really plant heavy, but and it's dairy and grain free. So it wasn't quite keto, but it was very plant and just clean meats heavy. And even the few clients, it's kind of a challenging meal plan because it's a lot of more intricate recipes than I prefer to recommend because it does take a lot of work. But the few clients I've gotten to do it have said the same thing. Them and their husbands are like, oh my gosh, I feel so amazing. And I felt like euphoric, just like this clean energy just buzzing through. It was pretty amazing. But yeah, it's a lot of work, so I'm trying to...
Right, and that's what's so interesting about a ketogenic diet is there are so many different ways to do it. You know, it sounds like it's one thing, but it really isn't. And some people are on one end of the spectrum and they're carnivores, and some people are on the other end of the spectrum and they're vegan keto, and they both can be in ketosis, they both can get benefits of ketosis, and they both can feel great. And one of the hard questions is there one that's better? Or if you're feeling great, does it not matter? So I know you've had some experience with a little bit of all of this. So tell us about not just your own personal transition to a vegetarian-based keto, but with your clients, why you have felt that's the better way to go.
Well, I think I have to step back from you know, trying to understand why we come to this conclusion to get to a really core principle. And that principle is that, you know, life is cycles. You can look at everything in life. You can look at night and day. You can look at the seasons, you know, your birth and your death. So the idea that we are static and we are going to do the same thing over and over just is incompatible with every aspect of life, no matter where you look. And so I think that is true with how we eat. And the other aspect of it is that when we look at how the body repairs itself and heals and grows, it's a response to a stimulus. So that stimulus is a change. So I think that's an important element to eating. So I guess what I would say is there is no perfect diet.
Right.
What is perfect is to change, to have cycles. And if you look at what the standard American, more than just diet, let's say lifestyle, which we actually prefer over diet, the typical way that Americans live is static. Mm-hmm. Constant stress, not moving, eating continuously throughout the day, and generally high carbs. So there's really not a change anywhere in there.
Right.
It's a continuous exposure to something. And our bodies are not meant for that. That's not how we're built.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, that's where we came to the idea that let's combine ketosis with plants and make it in a way that we actually incorporate cycling. And so I think in order to make that work and be practical, you have to fast. I don't think you can do this without fasting.
So what length of fast do you think works best in certain situations?
Well, we try to incorporate both. So we really like time-restricted feeding because I do think it's important to eat breakfast. Again, that cycle, the circadian rhythm, key element in my opinion. So we like time-restricted feeding at least, you know, a couple days a week.
Okay.
And then we also like to incorporate a more prolonged fast, typically 5 days. And one of the great products that's out there that really facilitates this is the Prolon diet.
We love it.
It is fantastic. It makes fasting so easy to do. And let's be realistic. If it's not practical, people are not going to do it.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting about the ketogenic diet is that I find people can fast much easier when they're already in ketosis. So,
yes. You
know, you can say fasting 5 days is hard. And for the average person, it probably is. For the average person in ketosis, I'm not sure how hard it is.
It's not.
Yeah.
At least from my experience.
Right.
So with this in mind, you know, we started to see, well, how can we help patients? And, you know, I started working with my own patients. And my patient population is largely cognitive patients. So typically elderly patients. Again, it has to be simple. It has to be practical.
Right.
If you're dealing with elderly people in general, or more importantly, cognitively impaired patients, if it's not simple, it's not going to work.
So fasting in elderly people can get a little tricky.
Well, the easy part for the fasting element with elderly patients is intermittent fasting.
Okay.
A lot of them do it on their own.
Yeah.
They don't even realize
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's only a 12-hour maybe.
Right.
But they're actually doing it regularly. So getting them to extend it to 15 and 16 hours is not that big a stretch.
Okay.
It can get a little bit trickier when you start doing a more extended fast, but that's where I think Prolon is fantastic.
Got it.
And so I'm regularly having patients well into their 70s using Prolon and finding it quite doable.
Yeah.
And so that's, again, it kind of fits in because it's plant-based. So it's just a nice fit for what we try to do with our patients. And then the other population, kind of at the other end of the spectrum, is I see young patients with dysautonomia in POTS. Mm. And for them...
Postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome,
thank
for
you.
The listeners. Where you stand up and your heart rate shoots through the roof and you feel lightheaded and awful.
Exactly. So for that group, the proportion that are related to autoimmunity, it's estimated to be about 50%. I think it's actually higher. I think that we're not identifying antibodies that could perhaps be 80% of that population. Mm. So I think it's a strongly autoimmune driven condition. And obviously, the mitochondria are very much involved in it. And then, of course, the gut with the microbiome. So
right.
For that population, this approach, this lifestyle actually helps them too, which is really fascinating. It's actually surprised me.
Yeah.
Because you have patients that you would not think that fasting would help, and it really does.
That's so interesting, because in a cardiology world, people with POTS, it's fairly frustrating because there's not a whole lot we have to offer them. You increase your hydration, you increase your salt, you can try and wear compression stockings, but it's fairly unrewarding because they tend to not get better that very quickly. But if a nutritional intervention like this can help them, I've got to start trying that with them. I haven't thought of that before.
Yeah.
Interesting.
No, the first positive response I got really blew my mind. You know, it was a, I think, 22-year-old young lady and very debilitated, just basically could not function.
Right.
And within 2 days of fasting, she started to tell me, I'm feeling better.
Yeah.
And after she continued it, she's feeling great.
Yeah.
So it was really kind of, this is incredible. And so I started using it more. And so again, it's kind of two ends of the spectrum. I personally wouldn't feel comfortable with a child, you know, taking this approach and fasting.
Right.
But I think a young adult, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's very well tolerated.
So Stephanie, you're the sort of day-to-day coach with a lot of the clients you
right.
see. And the knock against a vegan keto diet is that it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really prepare and spend a lot of time thinking about it to make sure you're getting adequate levels of fat, even adequate levels of protein, and preparing all your food. So what are some of the tricks or the tips that you think are the top ones to help people who want to follow a more plant-based ketogenic diet?
Well,
colors.
I would say, I do eat the rainbow, as I say, not Skittles.
Well, our system.
We have a system where we're organizing our foods into like, I had SIBO at one point and I saw this list that was like red, green, you know, like the stoplights
right.
of foods that you couldn't eat. And it really helped me because I'd be like at a restaurant whipping out my list. It was like a 14-page list or whatever.
Oh,
it was really fun. But so we're organizing our foods into columns like that. So you could just, I can eat all these foods in the green list, all these foods, you know, so that's kind of easy. But then if you don't cook or whatever, it's just a list of ingredients too. So I have written a lot of recipes, and I hate cooking, and I'm busy and lazy. I hate to say lazy, but I am. I'm going to admit it. So I'm trying to cook with that in mind because
okay.
I hate doing it. So it has to be something that can be like prepared in 10 minutes. I don't want all these gadgets and the strainer, and then you end up with a huge pile of dishes at the end of the night. So they're simple and they're really tasty. I would say the key is we kind of treat our food as a vehicle for the olive oil and MCT oils. And so just anything, I make really good dressings and sauces and spices just, you know, to try to get that in there. And then I like to start the day with a smoothie. This would be the first thing I help people add, actually, rather than saying, okay, we got to cut this and cut that. I say, let's add to what you're already eating a green smoothie in the morning. So a couple strawberries, a bunch of spinach, some hemp, an avocado, and MCT, of course. So it's really, you know, fat-full and veggie-full. And it just sort of... it fills a lot of voids. You know, you could eat like a ton of pizza, but you can't sit down and eat like bucketfuls of kale salad because
right.
you know, all the nutrients that your body is wanting have been met. And so it's like, oh, I'm good, you know, and it shuts it off. But with pizza, it's still like, no, I still don't have it. So you could just gorge. So this starting your day off or lunch, whatever you prefer for the green smoothie, sort of ripples out. And it kind of naturally has them cut back on other things. So it's just a nicer start to, hey, we're going to meet and we're going to add something to your diet instead of take it out. So I try to do little twists like that to make these changes a little easier. And we try to incorporate it a little bit more slowly rather than he can just turn on a dime and transform everything, but not most, you know, most of us can't do that. So that's I try to be like, let's prioritize the changes, let's do them slowly and incorporate them. And once it's like working in your life, then we'll look and add the next one. And so I kind of slow everybody down and keep everybody realistic.
And that's a great approach for people to hear because we talk about so much information and we give so many tips and people think they can just run out and do it right away. And yeah, like you said, most people don't work that way. It's a process. And so that's why it's great to have someone like you who can coach people along and really help them prioritize the process to understand what needs to change first and then what can follow after that. And so people need to keep that in mind when they're trying to make lifestyle changes because if you try and do too much at once, you can end up frustrated that it's not all working.
Yeah, you could maybe white knuckle it for a short time and then be like, this sucks, it didn't work. You know, then you're like, oh, another one that failed. But it was like, it was just too much.
Yeah. Now, when you were talking about cycling, and we talked about this a little bit at lunch the other day, you also mentioned, though, about cycling with meat. So it's not that you're 100% all plants, no meat, but it seemed like you felt, if I can put words in your mouth, that cycling with meat was also important. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure. I think that, I think if you separate out vegans, because a lot of people that choose a vegan lifestyle, it's more than the food.
Right.
You know, there are other issues that led them to that way of living. And I think that for our style, it's possible to maintain a vegan ketogenic style of eating, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
We'll be the first to tell you it's difficult.
Right.
If you're more of a vegetarian plant-based, it's certainly much easier to do. But I personally, the way that we eat is actually to have some meat. And the way we do that is we try to eat meat in a 24-hour period, roughly once a week.
Okay.
Now, we don't always stick to that. Certainly in things like conferences and things, you know, traveling, it gets a little bit more challenging. And so we're flexible and pragmatic about it. But ideally, we would say, go through your weekly cycle, which we do a 5-day plan, and we try to encourage people to do 3 days of time-restricted feeding in that 5 days, and then have a meetup day. And for that day, you have meat with each meal. Now, it's not necessarily gorging on huge steaks. We're talking small serving sizes.
Okay.
But you're having animal protein with each meal.
Yeah.
And the way I like to think about that and the way I explain it to patients is that we are omnivores. And to think that we're omnivores that had access to animal meat every day is not realistic.
Right.
I mean, you can just look around the environment. And what would happen is you would have a kill. You would capture some sort of animal, whether it's a fish, a bird, or, you know, a rabbit, whatever it is, and you would eat a lot of it. You would eat it for, you know, a day or two while it's still fresh.
Right.
And I think that's how our bodies are designed. And so that's kind of how we styled the plan, is to do that. And what it's doing is providing nutrients that you don't necessarily get from plants.
Absolutely.
I don't think that necessarily animal products are bad in that sense that some people do think they are, as far as health goes. But I think the problem is that the meat that we have readily available is bad.
Mm.
And my approach is kind of beyond macronutrients. So we can talk about, you know, sugars and fats and things like that, and that's important. But I think even more important are the fatty acids that are present in the fats. And if you look at the meat supply in this country, not only is the omega-6-3 ratio really poor, but you have really elevated levels of palmitic acid. Palmitic acid is, you know, very inflammatory. It activates T1 and TH1 and TH17. So not only do you have inflammation, but you have revved up immune system, and that's what causes the atherosclerotic plaques. So I think that if you have really good quality wild game, it's completely different than the hot dog that you get in your grocery store.
Absolutely, right.
So I think that's important. And if you look at some of the things that become deficient in vegans in particular, there are things that actually meat are very rich in. So for example, B12, carnitine, you know, those are very key elements. And in fact, if you look at people who are ill, who are going to try to incorporate ketosis, they're going to struggle if they have mitochondrial dysfunction. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do a more plant-based ketogenic style diet on someone with mitochondrial dysfunction, they are going to struggle without carnitine.
Right.
It's essential. So meat is a great source of carnitine.
So is once a week enough to supply those people with the carnitine they need, or will you still supplement? And the same question for B12 as well.
Great question. So I think for the healthy individual, I think you probably would do fine with just once a week meat, but not sick patients.
Yeah.
And so we would regularly recommend relatively high doses, actually, of carnitine supplementation. The B12, my preference is actually to test for it. Mm-hmm. I think that routine testing of key nutrients like vitamin D and B12, they're so easy to do. And you can actually measure this and treat it, you know, as a titrated treatment rather than just take this pill.
So let's talk about that for a second, though, because there is a normal range in the lab. And that is derived from, you know, thousands of patients who they thought were healthy, and they checked their levels and defined a normal range. Does that apply? Do you think that's a true normal range? And where do you shoot for the levels in that range?
Well, you can see she's giggling, so she... No, I don't.
Okay.
So I like to use the term reference range.
Right.
And the reference range includes a lot of unhealthy, malnourished people. So certainly with vitamin D levels, I really would encourage people to do much higher than what's considered normal.
So like a 40 to 60... Or
that would be a bare minimum.
A minimum, all right.
I'm usually shooting for 80 to 120.
Now, isn't there a risk of vitamin D toxicity at too high a level?
It's actually quite rare. And, you know, if you're going to get into trouble with vitamin D, you're usually talking about 30,000 units a day before you really see a problem. Someone's got kidney stone issues, it might be a little different, someone with renal failure. But your average person can absorb 10 to 20,000 units a day without difficulty and not run into trouble.
Yeah.
And with B12, I actually prefer methylmalonic acid. I think that B12 levels get falsely elevated with dysbiosis, which is an abnormal mix of bacteria in the gut, which actually produce B12 levels artificially.
Interesting.
So I don't necessarily find that a B12 level itself is very helpful. Methylmalonic acid, I think, is more telling.
Now, that's going to be a tough test to walk into your doctor's office and ask for it. That's not going to happen.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
But fortunately now, there's direct labs for patients. So, we encourage people to work with their doctors. But if there's a test that you're interested in, you can actually get them on your own without a doctor's order.
Yeah. So I think the good take home there is if you walk into your doctor's office and they say, oh, your levels are fine, don't worry about it. Don't stop there.
Yeah.
Dig a little deeper, because what applies to you is not necessarily what the normal reference range is.
Yeah,
so that's a good point.
Absolutely.
So rather than just supplementing, you test with the B12, but you would supplement with the carnitine in someone who does have some mitochondrial dysfunction, but someone who's healthy and eating meat once a week, you're fine with not supplementing, if I could just summarize that.
Yeah. We haven't seen that be an issue. And obviously there are going to be circumstances that may arise where it could be a problem. But in general, I think a healthy individual with no indication of mitochondrial dysfunction is probably going to do fine if they're getting enough meat one day a week.
And then what about omega-3s and iron and calcium, and any concern with those?
So certainly the mineral component is a problem with ketosis becoming deficient in those minerals. We're not really deeply in ketosis, though, so I don't think it's quite the issue that you would have, for example, with a therapeutic ketosis.
And when you say therapeutic ketosis, are you talking about certain levels, like above 3 for beta-hydroxybutyrate? Are you talking about using exogenous ketones? What do you mean when you talk about therapeutic ketosis?
Great question. So our goal is basically to get to 0.8 to 1.5. That's kind of our level of ketosis that we're shooting for. And in that circumstance, I don't think we're seeing the level of fatty acid oxidation that we're going to deplete the minerals to the level that you would with someone 3, 5, et cetera. With iron, I think that with a menstruating female, it makes sense to supplement iron. Right. But I think most men, that's not a big an issue. And certainly if you're having meat once a week, I think you're going to be okay, assuming no other chronic illness. The things that I think that can be helpful in terms of supplementation, on the mineral side is absolutely, and this I think applies to most people, is magnesium. I think most of us walk around magnesium deficient. Right. So that's one that I give basically to everyone. You know, and the other thing with that is there's not a good test for it. So I don't have a way to titrate it. So I kind of just give it to everybody. And generally it makes people sleep better. And when sleep better, they feel better.
They feel better.
So that's kind of just an automatic one for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you look at the other aspect of the minerals, you know, I think that food tastes better when you season it. And so certainly just having them add salt to their meals, right, which most people are okay with and tolerate. I don't think you need to get to the point where, you know, you're using supplements. We just haven't seen that be a need.
Yeah. So actually, let me interrupt there for a second. So Stephanie, is that something that you try to incorporate into a lot of the recipes, different seasonings to help with the micronutrients? And what are some of your favorite ones for that?
Oh, gosh. I'm just thinking about my super lazy salad dressing would be like olive oil, lemon, Dijon, and then I like to put rosemary, or I mean thyme. Thyme is my favorite. And then I always use that pink salt, the Himalayan pink salt. I think all of the herbs are really good. One of my favorite mixes, I like to get mixes too because, you know, I like to be quick. I'm trying not to use the word lazy. but at Trader Joe's, they have an organic herb, mixed herb salad mix. So there's kind of, you get kind of random bits of herbs in each of them. They're just kind of different. So there's like dill, there's all kinds of stuff in them. So we try to use fresh herbs as much as we can and things because they're so high in antioxidants and flavor, let's face it. A lot of that. And I guess, what else do I put in there? I guess you don't really keep a track of what I do in that.
But I think that's a good starting point and tips to find sort of prepackaged, like at Trader Joe's, you're saying they have sort of the prepackaged ones that you can use. And because let's face it, we have to keep things easy if we're going to be right, compliant with it. And that's probably a big part of what you do is exactly, to help people stay on course.
But I do say you should make your own dressings because dressings, they use canola oil or soybean oil or whatever in them as a base. So, yeah. But it right, literally, I mean, I've timed myself when he's like, I've got to go. Will you make me a lunch? And so I'm still like, I have those little to go, you know, I get a little tiny Tupperware cup and just squeeze the half a lemon, the scoop of Dijon, the olive oil, shake it up, mix it with some herbs. I mean, it's so fast, but it's so important to make your own dressing. So, yeah. I definitely don't cut corners on dressings, but the Trader Joe's does have one. I think it's called a Green Goddess in with their mixed salads. That's an olive oil based one.
Interesting.
So that's a nice one to use, and I'll thin it out with a little olive oil, but it's a nice one to give you a quickie boost.
Okay. So I would like to touch on the omegas though, if we could.
Oh yeah, please.
So I think one of the important things to understand about omega-3 is it's the ratio is what's really important. Mm-hmm. And when you're not consuming a lot of the more, you know, basically, what's the word I'm thinking of?
Like the pro-inflammatories, omega-6s?
Yes. Yeah, so the food supply that we have is very much tilted towards omega-6. And in particular, the meats. So if you're eating a plant-based...
The grain-fed meats.
Yes, grain-fed. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. So the more plant-based that you eat, the less you're going to expose yourself with the inflammatory omega-6s. So your ratio is a little bit more healthy. But the other thing that's really important, and I haven't seen this necessarily in human data, but from animal studies, when animals are fed a high monounsaturated fat diet, their requirements for omega-3s dramatically change. And so our main fat in our lifestyle is actually monounsaturated. It's lots of olive oil, tons of avocados, nuts. So I don't think that our clients need a lot of omega-3 because what omega-3 they have is more effective, I think, based on these studies.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't have a lot of inflammatory omega-6 that they have to balance out.
Good point.
So in general, we're not using a lot of omega-3 supplementation.
Okay.
For that reason.
So talking about that balance, though, so when you're not using butter and ghee and lard as cooking oils, a lot of people will go to the omega-6 vegetable seed oils. That's sort of like a standard go-to when you're not cooking with butter. So how do you counsel your patients for cooking oils, and how do you keep them away from those?
Well, we definitely don't want them to go to those oils.
No, we teach them that they're evil.
Good. And what are some of your favorite substitutes?
Avocado oil.
So we really like to cook with avocado oil. Yeah. And then we just literally encourage people to drink olive oil. So if we say At the end of your salad, take your bowl and just finish the rest of your oil. So olive oil is fantastic, and we really encourage it. And then MCT oil. I think MCT oil is what allows us to have the level of plants and carbs that we do.
Yeah.
In fact, with our color system, if you do eat one of the red plants, you have to have a tablespoon of MCT to go with each serving to neutralize the effect.
So what's an example of a red plant, like a stop, don't eat plant?
Right. Yeah, like the stoplight, not right.
Not
color
the red
of
color,
the plant,
but the stop, right. Don't eat this. What's an
so,
example?
So for example, you know, we both enjoy the tropical fruits, and so pineapple would be an example. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do is we'll actually drown that pineapple in coconut cream. That's what we like to do. It's a great, you know, it's like a pina colada.
Yeah, it's so good.
But you can get kind of the same effect if you make a smoothie, let's say, and you put pineapple in it, put a tablespoon of MCT in it. What you want to do is you know, you've got the red plants are basically ones that have carbs greater than fats. So that's one criteria for the colors. And then the grams of carbohydrates are greater than 15 for the reds. So an MCT has basically 14 grams of fat for every tablespoon. So if you add that tablespoon of MCT with your red plant, you basically get to where it's neutral, close to neutral on the fat carb ratio. Now, we would limit that to one serving a day,
right.
But it allows you to have that sweet that people tend to crave. So it's a way to incorporate flexibility and really stick with the lifestyle. Those fats, in general, are not the same as the other fats, in particular MCT, in that MCT is absorbed directly across the endothelium. It does not go through the lymphatics and drag all those inflammatory compounds, like polysaccharide, which is this component of a bacterial cell wall, which is extremely inflammatory. I personally think that's why saturated fats are unhealthy more than anything else, is that they're dragging all these inflammatory products into the bloodstream. So MCT is a way to avoid that, increase the fat content in your diet. It also is more prone to generate ketones, so it's going to facilitate that process. So we're really big fans of both MCT oil and olive oil in particular.
Okay.
The other oils, we would really encourage people to just completely avoid as much as you can. And as a practical product, I always mispronounce the name, Miyaka.
Right. I was going to circle back to that. If you like butter, the Miyoko's vegan butter, vegan cultured butter, is
incredible.
So good. It's made out of coconut oil, but it doesn't taste coke. It tastes like cultured, salted, delicious, delightful butter. It's so good.
You can cook with it. You can add it to your vegetables. High smoke point, no concerns.
Exactly.
There.
Very, very tasty stuff. That woman is a genius.
Yeah. And we've done blind taste tests, and you cannot tell the difference between butter and this. Yeah.
No, you cannot. It's texture, everything.
It's perfect.
That mm-hmm. statement, though, just makes me think of the old days. I can't believe it's not butter. That's
yeah, no.
We're not talking about that.
No, we're not talking about that.
No. All right, so let's get into some controversies about plants, though. Let's talk about Dr. Gundry and his Plant Paradox book and the anti-nutrients, the lectins, the problems that plants can potentially cause for some people. What's your take on that?
Well, I think, first of all, I really respect what he's done. I mean, I like people to think out of the box. But to my knowledge, there's not a lot of science behind what he is espousing. My personal take on it is that individuals that are sick, individuals that have a leaky gut, are more than likely to respond well to his way of eating, because those toxins are going to be much more toxic to a compromised individual. Whereas a healthy individual with a very intact gut lining, with an immune system that's well-functioning, they're not going to have as big a reaction to these things. I mean, clearly they're toxins. I mean, nature is pretty fascinating, and it's designed these seeds very well.
Yeah.
There's a reason why these compounds are in them. Just like there's compounds in other aspects of plants that are very nurturing to humans. So I think it's something that is important to consider with individuals who are ill. I don't think it's as important for healthy people. So that's kind of our take on it. Am I speaking for you?
Well, yes, that, and frankly, if we get rid of them, then what else are we going to eat?
Right. Okay, so, but the next step then is that some people do feel better when they get rid of plants, and that's where this whole carnivore movement is coming from, and Sean Baker being the king of the carnivore movement because of just what a powerful and strong and imposing figure he is with the amazing things he's accomplishing. But then even people like Georgia Ead, who take a more maybe philosophical approach to it, or, you know, and she's seen all the benefits in herself by getting rid of plants and going perfectly carnivore. And what's your take on that when you see people feeling better and sort of thriving on a pure carnivore diet?
Well, I think it would go back to, you know, some things that are similar in the sense of the biochemistry behind, you know, meat, let's say, in the sense that, you know, mTOR is a fantastic thing to stimulate. But do you want to have it turned on all the time, your right. entire life?
Right.
I don't think so. Elevated levels of insulin growth factor. I mean, these are things that have positive effects. But like everything, if we really look at life, it's in spurts.
Right.
And so I think that these types of styles of eating can make people feel well, but I don't think they're a good choice for the longevity of their life. And that's the thing, is we don't have a snapshot of 20, 30, 50 years of eating a carnivore diet. We have months or maybe a year or two.
Well, people could point to, I guess, the Maasai and the Inuit, that they were close to a carnivore diet. Maybe not completely, but they were close. So there is some evolutionary basis there.
Well, you know, I've also read some things that the Inuit diet is not what we think it is.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, that maybe is questionable. But and I'm not going to say that's a wrong style of eating, because I don't think there is an ideal way.
Yeah.
I think that the way you eat is very individualized, and I think that the health of the individual, and perhaps more importantly, the composition of the microbiome, mm-hmm. makes a huge difference. And most people have unhealthy microbiomes.
Yeah.
And so if you eat meat only, that is much easier on the gut to digest, and you're going to have less issues with doing that with an unhealthy microbiome than someone who jumps in and has 50 grams of fiber a day out of the gate.
Right.
They're going to struggle.
Right. That's a great point. So one approach would be, then, if you're having trouble with plants, then maybe you need to fix your gut first, and then you won't have the trouble with plants. And that's part of the problem as providers and as physicians and coaches taking care of these people, is what markers do we follow? Because when you talk about longevity, sure, we could talk about mTOR, but it's kind of hard to measure mTOR on a regular basis. We can talk about AMP kinase and PAK, but those are hard to measure. So we have to find our surrogates. So we use CRP. We can use IGF-1. We can use blood sugar and insulin. But what do you find as the best markers that you think we can follow to see if somebody's on the right track?
Well, I think the ones you actually mentioned, those are the ones that I would tend to follow. I think it also depends upon what the goals of the individual are. You know, so for someone with purely a longevity or, say, a cancer prevention approach, that's very different than, say, a cognitive patient. I mean, I think that for a cognitive patient, we do need to have anabolic effects. In fact, I often tell my patients, I say, if you want to build brain, you build muscle. I really think the brain is tied to the muscle. And so in that individual, we have to have periods of stimulation of mTOR. It's just, I think it's very important. That may be an elderly patient, and you may say, well, you know, are you putting them at risk for a shorter lifespan? Are you putting them at risk for cancer? I don't know for sure. I don't think so when it's pulsed. And I think that's the key. If you look at most hormones are pulsed. So I think in keeping with that, I think you're okay to periodically stimulate these things. I would be very hesitant to have someone like that be on a carnivore diet. I just would.
Right.
On the other hand, if you're in your 20s and you're trying to build a beautiful body, I mean, that's what you're going to do. Who knows if that's a good choice long-term, though.
Yeah, very good point. All right, and now, so one of your exciting projects now is your book. So, Keto with Plants. Yeah. Now, what inspired you to write the book?
Well, I think that as we kind of were exploring for ourselves and for our practice how to blend ketosis with a plant-based diet, we really started looking for help.
Yeah.
You know, who's doing this? Where
right.
do we look to for guidance? There's not many people.
There's not much out there.
So with that sort of dearth of information, we decided, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to, you know, try and do the research. We're going to try and put together the food plans and make it really practical, because I think that's really important. And if we're going to do that for ourselves and our practice, we should make it available for everybody. And I think over the last year or two, we've started to see more people become interested in this and start to go in that direction. So I think it is a new trend, let's say. Mm-hmm. But we feel that, you know, getting a book is a great vehicle for us to get this experience that we've had out to as many people as possible.
Now, is it mostly a recipe book, or is there going to be some of your coaching involved in there too to help people kind of stick with the program?
It's a mixture of a lot. There's the science in the beginning that I'm trying to tone down so that us lay people can, well, not you two, but me and maybe a bunch of listeners can understand and decode. So there's the science behind it for those who like to know, you know, why they're doing these things. Right. Then there's a little bit of a coaching element. So it's like, okay, I know you're tempted to overhaul your whole lives, but let's not do that. And, you know, just to lay other foundations to make sure, give people permission to take time to take care of themselves. And I have some gratitude journaling. It's kind of a mixture of everything just to lay the foundations for a good start of a change that's going to become lasting. That was important too to us, is that this change would be lasting for people. So
yeah, so let's talk about that. I mean, we spend so much time talking about the food, but there's so much more than just nutrition and food that makes us healthy and helps our lives. So you mentioned some of them, with gratitude journaling and giving yourself permission to take time. So tell us a little bit more about what you think are the important pillars for people to have in their lives that will help just make their nutrition that much better for their lives and make their lives that much better in general.
Well, connection to each other, you're saying? And to yourselves. Modern medicine has separated our mind from our bodies so much and treat them separately, but the mind drives so much of it. I found this myself when I was struggling to lose weight. The scale was just, you know, I was obeying all the rules and the scale was just sitting there. And I know I shouldn't like get on it all the time because I don't like it. But I went on a 5-day meditation retreat and lost weight on the retreat. And he kept telling me, it's stress, it's stress, it's stress. And I'm like, you take your stress and you just shove it somewhere. And I'm tired of hearing about this stress nonsense. Yeah. And, you know, it turns out he was right, whatever.
Hard to admit that, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes. But no, stress is really, you know, it messes so many things up. So, and I didn't feel like I was a stressed out person, but I mean, I guess I was. I just was, you know, unhappy. Things frustrated me and annoyed me really easily. So with the mindfulness, that taught me, you know, that you can kind of let go and just of those annoying, you know, those recurring thoughts that drive the negativity. And it's just, you can't let go of even weight, I guess, if you can't let go of negativity. And so that's an element. And then as women, I think that we don't give ourselves permission because we're like, we need to do this for this for everybody else and give. But you can't give from an empty vessel. And, you know, that's just really true. And so you actually owe it to your family to take care, the time to take care of yourself so that there's more of you to go around. So it's really your duty to take care of yourself first. So I think shifting the thoughts on that. And then also the restriction thing, I try to shift the paradigm, you know, the thinking on that you are giving yourself nutrients rather than restricting the pizza, you know, just kind of shift the focus of it.
Yeah, even the words you use and the way you talk about it can be so important in reframing someone's opinion of it and can affect your success and their success.
Right. So try to also find the right motivation, not I want to be sexy or my doctor said I'm going to die, or, you know, we try to reframe to be more like empowering, positive psychology type reframe, like an immediate. We like to be immediately rewarded, so I like to focus on the how you feel after you eat a day like this. So I really try to connect the mind and the body so that you are aware of what you're putting into your body, how it makes you feel, and then that becoming the motivator rather than this long-term goal, like I'm trying to avoid cancer or avoid dementia, or, you know, that's just not motivating on the day-to-day when you're in the trenches. So we try to get immediate rewards in place and stuff like that. So there's a lot. It's a lot to pack into one book. And then there are recipes. Yes, sure. You're right. So it's coming together.
So now, do you have any meat-based recipes in there? Because you believe in cycling and doing this on occasion. Do you mention that in your book?
We don't, actually.
Okay.
I think most people have that covered.
You think there's enough out there for that? That's a good point. That's a very good point. Well, what's the time frame? I'm excited to see this book come out.
Well, we've got a couple of weeks left before we have to get it done.
All right.
So we're shooting for the 28th
mm-hmm. Of August.
August 28th.
Very good. Very good. Well, this has been a wonderful interview. I've really enjoyed talking to you, Dr. Mike and Stephanie. Thank you so much for taking the time. Any last words you want to leave our listeners with, and then where can they go to learn more about you?
Well, first of all, we really appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's been terrific. Mm-hmm. And you can find us online at www.ketowithplants.com. And one thing we'd like to say is that all of this is something that we're in together. And I think that working in a collaborative nature, both as professionals and as members of society, is the best way forward. And I think that's what I'd like to leave it with.
He means we, as in you and all of your listeners and us, not just us.
Right,
we are all of us.
Great point. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Diet Doctor podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.